If someone you love, or perhaps even yourself, is in a situation where you might be in danger, you call 000, right? It's what you've been trained to do for as long as we can remember. But when it comes to the issue of domestic and family violence, it can be a very complex situation for the police to manage. So that's why in March of this year, the police service established the Domestic Family Violence and Vulnerable Persons Command. Assistant Police Commissioner Brian Codd is heading up the command. Brian Codd, the command was established in March. What is your primary goal, please?
There was a realisation in late February this year. As you know, our commissioner has made absolutely no secret of it, that one of her priorities, Australia's very strong priority, is to do with domestic and family violence and the scourge it presents in our community. And I think she was showing a great interest in that area for a while. We had a series of events that I think happened at the beginning of this year, particularly around some very high-profile, maybe I should stop calling them tragedies, because that suggests that there might not have been things we could do to stop them. Maybe that's part of a conversation.
Yep.
But I guess the commissioner wanted to make a very strong stance that, look, this needs to have a holistic, strategic approach to it. You know, Steve, we have now evolved to where, and it might surprise some of your listeners, across the state about 40% of our time as your police department is now spent attending to domestic and family violence-related matters.
That surprises 40%. Me. That's a high figure. In
40%. One in four calls we receive for service now relates in some way to domestic and family violence. And in some districts in the state, over 50% of our time is on domestic and family violence. I remember used to speak to some police who'd say, you know, particularly the ones who thought we were being pushed for decades down more sort of social problems rather than typical law enforcement problems. And I think there's a fair bit of truth in that, and we need to discuss that. And they'd say, but we're not social workers and we're not the DV police. And I think the reality is by plan or evolution, we are. And with our 24/7 footprint and the powers and authority we have, particularly in crisis, we've inherited that responsibility and it's enshrined in legislation. So the commissioner wanted to make a very strong stance to say, look, this is a priority that I want to make a difference in. And as a result, we realised that we don't actually have a centralised strategic capability owner of domestic and family violence responses across the state, and we wanted to do that. So that essentially my command and the command I work within with my group is relatively small. We're not an operational command per se. That's still delivered by our frontline police and our specialist DV units.
What are you?
I'm in charge of the strategic capability, looking at the settings where we sit in the whole of the system, the ecosystem that is DV, looking for vulnerabilities in our part of that journey and looking for opportunities to develop training, policy and practice improvements so we can deliver the best service we can.
My guest is Assistant Police Commissioner Brian Codd. He heads up the Domestic Family Violence and Vulnerable Persons Command. So part of what you're looking at is the way police respond to survivors of domestic violence. So what have you learned that police haven't been doing well?
What I've learned right from the word go is what a complicated system. Steve, I've worked over nearly 38 years in policing. Sometimes I think, could you give me back to armed sieges and armed robberies, please?
They're
more straightforward. And look, I make light of that, but this is a serious matter. So domestic and family violence is based on a whole heap of interconnected and crossing factors, whether they're economic, social, criminal, justice-oriented, et cetera, et cetera. So it's incredibly complicated. We as police traditionally respond to incidents. And what we're finding, and particularly with the feedback we're getting from victim survivors and those on their behalf, is that our focus primarily on solving an incident of what's in front of us can at times not allow us to see the bigger picture about what's contributing to these sets of circumstances. And I think you'll find that's why there's a great deal of discussion at the moment about this issue of understanding coercive control.
Okay, so what are the problems that would often come up in the past and it would appear in the media quite frustratingly is that usually a woman would ring the police and say, my partner has threatened me, and the police would, in line with the law, say, has he hit you? Has he assaulted you? Has he done something to you? And she would say, no, but I fear he's about to. And the police couldn't act because no line of the law. They couldn't charge him with thinking about hitting his partner. They had how has that narrative changed? Because in many cases of the most dramatic ones in Queensland's last couple of years, the police knew about the perpetrator, often were called, but didn't see that there was a lawful trigger to physically intervene.
It's a really complicated area, but we are a bit more mature than that, or should have been, since the late 1980s, when the first form of domestic and family violence legislation came into Australia, into Queensland. And more particularly, there was the Act that was amended in 2012. And it clearly says that we as a police have a role to play, not just in for acts of physical violence, but those acts of coercive control, abuse that are non-violent, non-obvious, that might be around control of people's finances, power, and what they can do. The trick for us is that we're so used to being working in the criminal space where we collect evidence to, within the rules of evidence of court, if the elements suggest that an offence has been committed to the requisite standard, we arrest and away we go. The domestic violence area brings in a whole civil regime of elements which have advantages and disadvantages. Some of the advantages of that are for us to be able to use the balance of probabilities, which is a lesser standard of the criminal standard of beyond reasonable doubt, to come to a determination that a form of control has been occurring. The challenge is gathering the evidence to substantiate that. The other element of it in the legislation is that we're empowered to take sort of civil action, not only if an act of domestic and family violence, even if it's not physically violent, but it's other forms of abuse has occurred, is how you collect evidence to prove that to the extent that you determine that a protection order is now needed to make sure it doesn't happen again. And there's some of the complexities that we face, and there are a lot of subjective calls that are made there, a lot of calls made on the experience of the officer to understand the nuances. You know, we come up against some perpetrators who are well-trained in this space, Steve, who know how to play the game. And when some of our more junior and experienced and less trained officers arrive, they're the ones standing at the door welcoming us in with the broad smile and pointing very often, as you say, not always, but most often, the upset female who seems to be beside herself sitting in the corner and saying, it's just her, you know. And they're actual deliberate tactics to try and work the system and abuse the system to beguile us. And guess what? Sometimes they fool us.
Talk me through the domestic and family violence stats for the Greater Brisbane area at the moment. Where are we at the moment? If this is 40% of police work, what is that?
Here's a startling reality, and I don't want to steal too much of what I'm going to say on Saturday night at the Redlands event that we're speaking about, but last year, there were 120,000 DV-related occurrences that we dealt with last year. Now, let's do the maths there. That's 329 a day. Nearly every 4.4 minutes, there's a DV-related matter that our police are attending to. We now have 102,000 domestic violence orders in place in Queensland. Now, all of those will have different conditions on them that require perpetrators to comply with. So that needs a level of monitoring. And when people breach those orders, then that's a criminal offence that police can give effect to. Now, I could tell you that last year we had 28,000 breaches of the orders. There were other breaches of police protection notices and other orders. The trick for us here, and here's the challenge, not all of those orders are breached. And in fact, when you realise that some of the orders are breached multiple times, you would have heard a lot of discussion recently about the youth justice scenario, where it's a small number of about 10% responsible for a huge proportion of crime. Well, similarly, we found last year about 13,500 perpetrators subject to a DV order were responsible for the 28,000 breaches. Mm. So what we're saying here is there is still some hopefully positive impact of the order regime we have, where some people subject to an order do not breach again. And there's, you know, this is this balance we've got to get by intervening on those who need the most attention and not unnecessarily trap people into a criminal world who otherwise learn from the experience.
So you're getting anywhere in stopping them from breaching again or perpetrating again?
Yeah, well, look,
that's the hard part of the equation, I guess.
It is. Yeah. And I think before we get to a point where we're going to reduce, we're going to have to increase, because here's the other point of the argument. We believe, and researchers are telling us, we only know about 20% of what's going on. Mm. So 80% of potential domestic and family violence incidents across our community, police know nothing about. In fact, many people know nothing about. Before we get to a point, Steve, that I think we can start to meaningfully reduce the harm, I think we've got to open up confidence in the system to start biting into those who won't come forward.
You're working with other groups in particular, I think, like the Women's Safety and Justice Task Force. What's that doing? That's the state government's task force. Is it adding anything that helps sort of solve some of these statistics?
Well, we certainly hope so. We're putting a lot of our confidence that they will come up with some meaningful recommendations that will assist us. I know their first report has been extended because it's a big body of work that Justice McMurdo and the task force are doing. They're looking specifically at two matters for which a report's due out, I think, by the end of November. It was October. One specifically about giving advice to the government on legislating for coercive control, and the other was considering domestic abuse, domestic violence, a criminal offence in its own right. Now, I know through that journey they've invited submissions. We've been party to the publicly available submissions. And there's some confronting things for us, Steve, and for everybody in the sector. We're aware of some examples of where victims have not had a good experience with the judicial system and, from my perspective, with their interaction with police in this regard. So we're very open to learning about how we can improve and how we can transition. I'm confident that if we all are singing to the same song sheet here, and this is the importance of what I'm looking for within the task force, if we start looking to finger point at select elements of the whole system, I don't think we're going to get very far. I really am looking forward to this as an opportunity where we can make a change. We've got an opportunity here to really shake up the system and say, how can we all work together to reduce this scourge?
You're speaking at a special fundraiser event for the Redlands City Council on the 6th of this month. Is there a particular reason why Redlands? I assume domestic violence is all over, but is there a particular reason why?
Oh, one, because they asked me. Right. But if I could go a step beyond that, until March of this year, Steve, I was the Assistant Commissioner for Brisbane Region.
Okay.
And I developed a very strong connection with Redlands. Particularly, I arrived very early in the COVID pandemic that hit us in Brisbane and immediately had to put on my district disaster coordinator hat. And there I was responsible for engagement with both the Redlands Council and the Brisbane City Council, both who were extremely great to work with. Through that, I've developed relationships with that community. I'm always going to be extremely thankful. And I also want to acknowledge some of the work they did down there as a community led by their council, particularly around the Bay Islands on COVID-related things, was extraordinary. And they struck me as a community, having spent some time as in my early days as a police officer down that way, they struck me as a community that's looking to make change and are really trying to put their energies in the right place. So they annually will have this event to raise funds, and those funds are directed into really fantastic areas. One of the places I'm aware of is the Centre for Women, who we have some co-responder arrangements with in Logan and elsewhere. And so the opportunity just to come and talk, highlight what we're doing, and I guess delight in the fact that here's a community you want to talk about a really difficult scenario.
Okay. I remember once I was talking with a cop about drug use and what have you and drug crime, and I rattled off the usual suburbs, you know, you'd expect, and he said, "You goose, do you think it doesn't happen in the high-class suburbs as well?" He said, "It's all over."
Of course it does. Yeah. For a whole range of complexities, I can tell you that in Queensland by police district, the highest proportional areas of domestic violence, and some might not surprise you, far north, Queensland, there's some very unique issues to do with First Nations communities there and our understanding and the trust in police in working in that environment. There's Townsville, Logan and the Gold Coast have very high rates. There's a reason there. I worked down the Gold Coast, and when I arrived there in September 2015, it was just after three very high-profile domestic family violence homicides, and we took some steps there to approach things in a very different way, and that means fleshing out the reality of just how much this is in our scenario. Mm-hmm. See, can I share with you a fact that I wanted to mention before that maybe paints why it is important to engage with things like this Redlands community event, and that there needs to be engagement across our community in all sectors, not just government agencies. Do you know that in the last 7 years of the domestic and family violence homicides that have occurred, and I hate talking about these numbers. It's like the road toll, isn't it? These are human beings.
Try not to depersonalise.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They're human beings. But at the end of the day, it does give us some indication of where we're at. Last year, there were 21 domestic and family violence-related homicides in Queensland. That's 21 lives destroyed in families. But it was the lowest that we've had in certainly 7 years and possibly as many as 15 years. Now, I'm not going to be happy until that's zero. But that's not the most important aspect of that. What we found
How did that come about? I mean, that's good news, really.
It does.
Well, it looks like good news.
It does, but I think we've got to be careful that some of the settings here, and this is the point I'm going to get to, are not necessarily because of anything we do or don't do, or you can't sort of definitively say, sure. Well, what was that magic that happened?
Yep.
Because nearly 70% of the domestic and family violence homicides in Queensland in the last 7 years were committed by people we had no previous domestic and family violence contact with.
Right.
So here, how do we balance? Zeroing in on those recidivist high-risk ones that we know about, knowing that nearly two-thirds of domestic and family violence homicides, and homicides are not the only tragedy in DV, occur without formal contact in DV with police. I'm of the conclusion someone knew. Someone in another part of the system, somebody in the community, somebody in the family knew or had an inkling and an intuition. And we've got to grow up, Steve. If we want to really, genuinely want to change this, we've got to get away from this don't dob mentality. If we intervene earlier, and I know there's programs to do with bystander programs happening now, if we intervene early, we've got a chance of saving lives. And it's as simple as that.
Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Assistant Commissioner Brian Codd. And he'll be speaking at the Redland City Council's event Dinner on Rouge this Saturday, the 6th, at the Redland Performing Arts Centre Concert Hall in Cleveland. Funds raised from the Dinner on Rouge event will be assisting people whose lives have been damaged or shattered by domestic and family violence. And I should mention, if the conversation with Brian Codd has raised any issues or concerns for you, you can call and talk to someone at 1-800-RESPECT, or you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14.